Bodhisattva's prayer. As long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, to dispel the suffering of all beings, for as long as space remains. So sometime around 100 CE, these stories began to emerge of Buddha's previous lives. And these are called Jataka stories. They became very popular, and they may very well have been the seeds of the entire notion of the Bodhisattva, one whose orientation is to practice the six paramitas for the sake of others, rather than for self-benefit. And that this began to be celebrated as a path to awakening. There are some stories I'll share with you. One is the story of the great monkey king at Barhut. It's the Mahakapi Jataka. Mahakapi. It describes how the Bodhisattva was born as a great monkey who dwelled in a beautiful Himalayan forest among a large troop of monkeys. According to the story, near the bank of the river Ganges, a huge banyan tree bore fruits with divine fragrance and flavor. Though the great monkey and his troop took utmost care to see that no fruit fell from the branch that stretched toward the Ganges, one ripe fruit did fall into the river and was caught in the net of a fisherman who showed the fruit to the king of Benares. The king went to the tree with his retinue and saw the monkeys eating the fruit. Annoyed, he ordered his archers to shoot them. The frightened monkeys approached the Bodhisattva, who comforted them and told them not to worry. He tried to make a bamboo bridge between the tree and another tree on the other side of the river. But somehow the bamboo shoot fell short of the length required to form the bridge. Realizing this, the Bodhisattva stretched himself at the end so that his herd could pass safely over on his back. The monkeys escaped, treading on the back of the Bodhisattva. The king was filled with deep emotion to see how the Bodhisattva endangered his own life, arrows flinging by, for the safety of his retinue. The king commanded his attendants to safely bring down the Bodhisattva afterward. And another one. Once a bamboo forest was on fire, and it spread quickly due to the strong and dry wind. The flames swallowed up everything in the mountain jungle. All life was being eaten alive. A parrot named Joyful Head was disheartened to see all the living beings having no way to escape. So Joyful Head flew to the sea nearby, wet its small wings with the seawater, and flew back to spray the water drops over the flames. It flew back and forth endlessly, despite becoming very weak from its effort and quite near death. Its determination and sincere act moved the heavenly king, Indra. "Joyful Head, with your tiny body," said Indra, "tell me, how are you going to put out this wide and forceful fire?" "My intention is even broader than the fire," Joyful Head replied. "If I am not able to extinguish the fire in this life, I vow to continue and put it out in my next life, replied the parrot. Indra was so moved by the parrot that he manifested his miraculous power to create a great rain and poured over the forest. Soon all beings were saved. The Buddha said, as part of the sutra, this parrot was my past life, indeed, and all the birds and beasts in the jungle were none other than the villagers. The former me had rescued them by putting out a fire. In this life, I will extinguish all fires of anger, greed, and ignorance in order to save them from suffering and attain peace. In their previous lives, the villagers had the remarkable opportunity to take the five precepts. Therefore, they were able to understand the truth thoroughly today and attain the sagely state of first fruit. Our pantheon of bodhisattvas, I like to think of them as you know, multi-gendered expressions of Avalokiteshvara. All the bodhisattvas of compassion manifesting in all these different ways. We have, of course, Avalokiteshvara with those 1,000 hands, each with an eye on it, tears rolling down his face, witnessing the suffering of the world, the great witness to the suffering of the world. We have Guanyin, the female rendition from China, who observes the suffering and reaches out that hand to help people one at a time. We have Jiko. Jiko is a Japanese version of a bodhisattva who vowed not to attain Buddhahood till all hells are emptied. Not to attain Buddhahood. Such an interesting vow. So many of us probably practice for the sake of our own awakening, for the sake of our own coming to peace in some way. And here is a vow not to attain for the sake of others. And of course, you and I are manifestations of these bodhisattvas in this world. By showing up, we have vowed in some way to bear witness to things just as they are. We've taken that first step. The step of opening the heart, the step of receiving things just as they are. Bernie Glassman in his Peacemakers group says the first step and the most important step is simply bearing witness. In bearing witness, we receive what is. And as we read in one of our own sutras, realizing what is, we respond to what is. This is the bodhisattva action, taking care of the one body of reality. Sometimes I've mentioned this notion that each of us is one of Avalokiteshvara's hands, because we do have this way of dividing reality into this and that, into you and me, myself and others. So according to that narration and that way of thinking, there is this self unfolding, and that is you or me. And each of us is part of this great functioning of reality and is ever witnessing this unfolding, even as we are part of it. Of course, we imagine ourselves to be more separate from it than we actually are. We think of ourselves over here and reality out there. But everything is quite profoundly interwoven. We have all, at one point during this sesshin, for example, we were sitting together in the zendo. We had a sesshin last week, sitting together in a zendo, and one person started laughing. And others had not even entered the room yet, so we had no idea what the joke was. And it just was infectious, taking joy in each other's joy. Before long, this had spread through the zendo in this beautiful way. And of course, we recognize how vulnerable this also makes us, perhaps in times of pandemics. One body unfolding, touched by the intimacy of this reality, we may find that we can't help but care for it as ourselves, that old golden rule. Not really necessarily something that can or needs to be explained, logically speaking, something that we sense deeply into through this practice of simply bearing witness is just how boundlessly compassionate the human heart is. Particularly as we begin to allow our self-centered stories to unfurl in front of us, as we see this over and over and bear witness to this on the cushion, we may find that we're getting a little bit bored of them, frankly. That maybe they don't quite capture our imagination the way they once did. It might even be a little frightening to imagine needing to protect and defend and put on airs for the sake of this self that we imagine exists as a separate entity. There is something kind of funny and addictive about the self selfing the self. But sometimes something breaks through. Sometimes it happens in tragedy. We hear many stories of awakening that have to do with someone's child being close to death or something terrible unfolding. But there are just as many stories of awakening that are the talk of a rock on bamboo, cricket songs in our hearts, a light rain in the leaves, a small breeze. Everything falling away, we're just here, awake, no longer separate, but intimate with the great reality, the great matter. Reality simply unfolding without any gap, without anything separate anywhere, boundless and free. More that we become intimate with this, with just this exactly as it is. Ironically, nothing special and yet so sacred and beautiful and mysterious. Who can say what it is? Is it a dream, a phantom? Who can say? But the more we practice being intimate with it, letting down our guard, letting down our defenses, perhaps opening beyond our stories, even as they persist, even as our stories and self-seeking persists, sometimes we just see that and continue to be present anyway and open. With things as they are. It's hard not to love. Hard not to care. Hard not to respond as best we can to alleviate suffering. For we aren't separate from one another. Just as the laughter sweeps the zendo, so do the tears. We care for the one body of reality. We care for one another. Our great bodhisattva vow. As long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, to dispel the suffering of all beings for as long as space remains. What a vow. Worth reading over and over. Worth kneeling and reciting. Worth allowing it to penetrate the heart. At first, it may feel kind of forced. So many of our practices do. You know, when we first arrive, we do all this bowing and we wonder, like, what is all this strange cultural appropriation? But in our persisting, these profound forms and sutras work on us in such a deep way.